Brian Burke joins us. You're an influencer, Brian. We had you on last week. You brought up the board game Sorry that you were playing, and I had a number of people say they heard the interview and went online, bought the board game, and they're loving it. So look at that. Was it Hasbro or the whatever? Milton Bradley owes you some revenue, I think.
Well, maybe we'll have a tournament once we get out of quarantine here.
Yeah, it'd be exciting, wouldn't it? A big Sorry tournament. I guess let's catch up. How's the last week been? What have you been up to?
Well, I've got my daughters. They're both on 14-day lockdowns because they traveled outside of Canada, but one's out of it now, and the other one's going to be out of it on Sunday. So we're going to do an extra week. They're going to stay here with me for an extra week. They're doing homeschooling. Their school is doing online stuff, and I still go into work just for a couple hours a day, and I'm working on the technology. They haven't been able to do it, so I can do it from home, but I'll be from home soon.
So are you able to help out with that homework? Are you of any use there, or is that...
They go to one of the best private schools in Toronto.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to help them with their math homework since they were in grade six. they're doing stuff now. My daughter in grade 10 is doing stuff that was senior year or an AP class when I was in high school. So I'm no use to them at all. I can help in history. That's about it.
Well, that makes me feel good because I'm in the same boat. My oldest is in grade 9, and I am I'm so out of my depths. I have no clue what they're doing. He's mentioning terminology to me. I guarantee you, I've never learned that. So it's good to know I'm not.
It just proves what you know, what you learn when you get out of high school is how much you learn that you will never, ever, ever use again.
It is true. It is true. At least that's what I tell myself. You know what? Credit to you. At the end of our conversation last week, you brought up Ken King. And I just with everything, it was our first day being out of studio, and I guess I wasn't thinking. But like I say, credit to you. Can you tell us the story? And I know you've told it before, and I'm just throwing it open. Whatever you want to talk about is certainly great. But I love the story about how you came to be a member of the Calgary Flames. You had no intention. There was nothing in your body or soul that said go to Calgary, but you met with King and then suddenly things started to change.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about Ken for a couple minutes at least. A guy of that magnitude and stature who is so important in Calgary should not move on without being, you know, praised and lamented. I mean, he was if you think of the last 20 years, is there a bigger personality or a more influential person in the city of Calgary than Ken King? You're talking three or four people that you'd have to argue about. But the story, when he called me, I had been let go by the Leafs, and I was waiting for another GM job. And he called me and said, would you be interested in being the president of hockey operations of the Calgary Flames? I said, no. And he said, would you give me a chance to sit down and talk about it? I said, sure. Because I've been friends with Ken forever. So he said, why don't you come to Calgary? I said, no. I said, when I came in and brought my daughter there right after the flood, I got spotted and everyone thought I was coming there to work. So, no, I'll meet you in Chicago or something. And he said, well, I'll come to Toronto then. So we met in a room in the King Edward Hotel, and he laid out the job. And we met for about 3 hours, and I went downstairs and had a beer. And because at that point, I didn't care if anyone saw me because I was interested in the job. He said, you'll have to come out and meet with a couple of the owners. I knew Murray from the league meetings, but I didn't know the other guys. And so I came out for a meeting, and we got the deal done. And I worked there for 5 years and loved it, absolutely loved it. But Ken was really a visionary. He was a very smart man, a very tough man. He has a legendary temper. But as I say to people, it's the same thing with Pat Quinn. Pat had a horrible temper, but a long fuse. You had to work to get Ken mad, usually. And at first he'd be like, well, do you want to start down that road? And then when he got mad, just like Pat. Pat would shake, he would get so mad. But Ken had a horrible temper, but a long fuse, real kind heart. Like, his appearance and his, you know, persona was gruff. But he did so much for so many people and was such a dedicated dad. And he'll be missed in Calgary. He'll be sorely missed. And he fought a great fight. He told me a couple months ago, he said 4.5 years ago, they told me I had 6 months to live. So he fought the good fight. Rest in peace, Ken. Good man. We'll miss you.
Yeah, no question. And We had some people on and we talked about stories. There would be times where I would get a text or a phone call, be like, come to my office. And don't give me any BS. You can't make it. I'll see you here. We'd meet at a restaurant or whatever. And more often, there were a few times he wanted to talk about something business related. And there were a couple of times where I left and I didn't really know why we got together. But we had a conversation. We talked about books and about, you know, philosophy, just different things in his life and his experiences. And you walked out, and it almost felt like a father figure type of a meeting. And knowing that he was sick, we would stay in touch. And my father-in-law, about a year and a half ago, he passed away from cancer. And I mean, how do I talk here? Here's a man who is dealing with cancer, and I'm talking about my father-in-law. He said, do you want me to give him a call? We can talk about it. And now he's talking to me and trying to, you know, console me and make me feel better about the impending loss of my father-in-law while he is going through the same thing. It was just so unselfish, and it's something that I'll forever take away. And like you say, he had that persona more. I would say to him sometimes, I'm like, why don't you let this guy, like this guy, because I don't need, this is the guy that you really are. Why don't you show people this side of you more often? And like you say, it just, it really wasn't by design. He was the guy he portrayed in order to do the things he did, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. I think it's you know, I've been accused of the same thing on a smaller scale, but he did so much behind the scenes, so much charity work. He was so generous personally. And if you said, well, I wish people would know more about this side of you, he'd be like, no, I don't want anyone to know anything about this side of me. So, like I say, driving force in Calgary, I think it's so fitting that he got the new building approved before he moved on. I think that was really, you know, that's going to be his legacy. And I'm sure they'll sell the naming rights, but I hope there's some part of that arena that's called the Ken King Pavilion or something, because he's responsible for it.
And again, you're no stranger to negotiation. You're a lawyer by trade. You've been through a number of things. He convinced you on this job that you had no business in taking. What was it about that meeting? How did he sway you?
Well, I said, who's going to be in charge, Ken? And he said, well, I am. I said, okay, then I'm not interested. He said, well, someone has to make the final call. He said, ultimately, it's ownership. He said, but day-to-day, it's me. And he said, that doesn't mean you won't have tremendous influence. And this way he laid it out, and I used the same analogy when I hired Brad Treliving. He said, look, just imagine we're business partners. And if we're business partners, would you walk in one morning and say, I'm taking the next 2 weeks off for vacation? No, you tell me a month before, I'm thinking of these 2 weeks. Is that work for you? And we'd work through it. Or would you come in and say, I'm going to fire Joe Smith today? And you wouldn't do that. You'd say a week earlier, you'd say, I'm having real problems with this guy, and we'd work through it together. And that's how it's going to work. And I used the same analogy when I hired Brad Treliving. I said, you can't walk in and say, I'm trading for this guy or that guy. We got to do this stuff collaboratively. And it worked beautifully. And the deal I made with Ken was that at the end of each season, each side would review it, and if they were happy, then we'd keep going, and if not, one or the other could walk. And so my last year there, Ken called me in and said, we think Tree's good to go, and, you know, Donnie Maloney coming in influenced that too, because Donnie, you know, that any wisdom I could impart to Tree, not that he needs that much, but Donnie could do that too, you know, the gray hair in the room. And so he said, it's time. I said, okay, it was great. Thank you for 5 great years. And people ask me all the time, what was my favorite stop in the NHL? And I said, well, you got to qualify a little bit. We won it all in Anaheim, so that's always going to be special. And Vancouver, I did 2 tours of duty, and both times the team got dramatically better, and we rode a big wave, and that was fun. But my favorite place to live was Calgary because of the people and because it was so physically beautiful. And the thing that I'll never forget, I tell people this all the time. I got to Calgary, and I'd say to someone, what do you do? And he said, well, I'm an accountant, and I'm on the board of Big Brothers, Big Sisters. Yeah. And I meet the next guy. What do? I work at a bank. Oh, and I work at a shelter downtown for homeless people. Like, everyone in Calgary does something to support the community. It's unbelievable. I've never seen participation levels like that. And I'm not talking about just writing checks. I'm talking about putting in the time. So that's what I loved most about it. The everyone puts their shoulders to the wheel, and pushing will make things better. I've never lived in a place where people had a better attitude that way.
Well, and you know what? That's something that I know we as Calgarians, and just they're going to love to hear that. And it's as you can imagine, living through this right now, there is always such a there's a groundswell of support for whatever it is. And this is, I think, hard for a lot of people here because there are so many businesses, local businesses, people, shelters, you name it, that need the help. But you can't help in the normal fashion. We can't band together. We can't meet at the McMahon Stadium parking lot and then go out and canvass the community or do certain things. So I can feel it that base that you talk about, they're aching to help, but it's such a unique situation where everyone has to stay at home. Everyone's fighting to find a way to help, and it's really hard right now.
Yeah, and this, we haven't seen this in 100 years. The last time we had an illness of this magnitude, a pandemic of this scope, was 101 years ago. So it is tough. I mean, I'm very frustrated. I'm not being able to work as much as I do, not being able to do any charity work. I'm not sure we're going to hold my charity event in June. My Berkey's Targets for Kids, which we've had now for 5 years, we're not sure we're going to be able to do that. We're going to wait and see. So I'm very frustrated by it. But everyone's got to be patient, follow the rules, stay home, and we'll get through it. We'll get through this. That's the important thing is, and I know things are tough financially and economically in Calgary as well, but like, this is a triple whammy. But we'll get through it, and yeah, we'll all be better for it.
Thanks, Brian. I really, really appreciate it. I think we all needed a little of this today. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.